Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
In the dark, I fed my dream. Permaculture flows like sweet springs. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be. Permaculture, P-I-L-P, I'm the king. Wrapping up in everything. Bring a change.
Oh yeah, welcome to episode 335 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Oh yeah, good to be here with y'all today. If you would, as you're coming in, hit that thumbs up, tell everybody we're live. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Living Soil Foundation. Yeah, buddy, we are doing some big stuff. Turns out my engineer, I think, went on vacation. So as far as those test results, I get them when I get them. I guess the last thing he told me was, hey, man, everything looks great. But I can't do well, you know. Anyway, it is what it is, y'all, and it do what it do, according to a ghetto philosopher. Anyway, how's it going on your end, son?
Pretty good. We just got back from picking up a rental car. I have a consultation coming up on the other side of Dallas, and then on the way back, we actually stopped at a gun store and got Emily a rifle. Actually, technically, it's a pistol. Technically, it's a pistol. Everything's like on the up and up. It's not like illegal or shady or anything like that. But, just a nice home defense, you know, pistol caliber carbine. So we don't have to worry about, you know, hitting the three houses down if need be and stuff. It'll stop.
Yeah. Well, man, you gotta love it, man. It almost sounds like a drug deal. We picked up a car and some guns on the way home. Yeah.
And the car's a Chrysler.
Oh, how about that, man? The only thing make it worse is a Cadillac. So, hey, y'all, thanks everybody for being here tonight with us. And everybody in the chat, hey, who we got here? Burke Spring, Colleen, Double A, Maryland, Juby Joe says, great interview with Ann Vandersteel. Yeah, folks, you guys should hear what she said offline. There are certain things, man, I hate to do that to folks, but man, there are certain things that, you know, folks can't say publicly. But pray for Ann because she's got a lot on her plate, y'all. There really is a lot on her plate. And, you know, a lot of us out there are dealing with a lot of crazy things these days, and it's not going to get it simpler anytime soon. So anyway, while you're here on the Pimpcast, hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live. Hey, hey, Alabama. Vicky's in the house and a number of others. So if you would, hit that thumbs up once again. So let's talk about some of that farm news. And I'm going to give you a little tip. William, don't let me forget to talk about some tips with fireworks. Folks, okay, look, I'm an Army sapper. Don't worry. I'll come to that in a minute. Anyway, if you can see, I don't know if anybody notices, but I'm probably two or three shades darker than I normally am, that you've normally seen me. In fact, William, you guys noticed it when you were here.
Yeah, but you can't tell it on the webcam. You can totally tell it in person. This is probably the darkest I've ever seen Dad, like, past the shirt, you know, tan and stuff like that. But yeah, you guys can't tell on camera. He didn't look any different.
Yeah, well, I am a couple of shades darker, and I'm getting that vitamin D while I can, because despite the fact, like Ann was talking about, they're being sprayed into oblivion down there. In fact, she sent me a video to this morning. She was coming out of a class or a Pilates class or whatever it was she was doing, points the camera at the sky, said, yeah, this is exactly what we're dealing with right here in Florida, and apparently it's all over Florida. But strangely enough, right here in Western North Carolina, I let me back up a little bit. I talked to Ariana Masters earlier today. I had to get some information from her because she has access to information I don't have. Anyway, I was asking Ariana about a certain place somebody wanted to know about. And, you know, as I was talking to her, she's saying, well, hey, you know, how are the chemtrails in Western North Carolina? I'm like, well, they're sneaky about it. I mean, it's not overt. Now, I have seen a few overt chemtrails, but they're doing this thing at night because you wake up and there's this haze that's persistent. It stays all day long. Everybody thinks they're looking at a blue sky, but they're not. And it's that constant haze. And they got everybody fooled into thinking, oh, I got blue skies. No, you don't, folks. I took pictures of what a blue sky should look like for the 30 days after that engineered hurricane that happened in Western North Carolina. So, yeah, they're just being more slick about it. They're doing it at night. They're using a different formula. And they're still – and when you see those ripples in the clouds, folks, those aren't natural. They're using – that. Those are radar. You're being cooked by radar all the way around. Anyway, I'm not going to –
Yesterday we had – well, yesterday we had like a checkerboard cloud pattern.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, see, those – they're doing a lot of the overt stuff here and there, but her radar data is showing she may be getting spoofed at this point because they know what she's doing. So anyway, folks, man, you got to stay alert, stay alive. So back to the sun and why I'm darker. Folks, I am practicing what I preach. I am – everybody in – every farmer I know and everybody in construction, we've been doing everything backwards forever and a day. They tell you, stay out of the sun. Don't do this, folks. I'm doing the very opposite. I do whatever clerical things I need to do early on, and then I spend literally out there cooking in the sun. Look, I know where the electrolytes are. I know where the salt is. I'll just use more of it as I'm getting more of the sun. So I'm going to encourage everybody as much as you can. I know what your dermatologists are saying. I know what these other people are saying. Look, they're all from a centralized system, and I am decentralized, okay? That's why I don't listen to centralized MDs. I mean, these people are nothing more than pill pushers in my view. So I'm going to go to decentralized people like Jack Cruz and Dr. Henry Ely, a number of others out there that are giving you the polar opposite advice. And some persistent things that were going on with me have all but disappeared. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of, you know, things that still need some time. But I am seeing massive improvements. So, folks, do the best you can. Stay off these devices. If you got to be around them, get out as often as you can. I know some people just can't escape it, but do what you can. All right, some other things I'm doing here, folks. I'm trying to make as much compost as I possibly can. Part of it being, I haven't yet put out the video, son, but you'll find out, I guess, along with everybody else right now, is I did a video about a month ago where I bought some of that store-bought this highly touted mushroom compost, no less, right? And it's basically wood chips. When we looked at it under the microscope, there was bacteria and nematodes. And you want to tell them why there's nematodes and bacteria in there?
Well, bacteria, because you're going to find basically bacteria everywhere. Like, you're very rarely going to find a fully sterile, like, substance, especially when it's been on the ground. But nematode, because right before bagging or packaging or shipping or whatever, they apply a nematode extract, which is basically useless if there's no prey for the nematodes to eat. Only one like group of nematodes eat bacteria, and those aren't even like you really want the predator or the omnivorous nematodes, the ones that eat other nematodes. They eat anything that fits in their mouth.
Yeah, see, that's what you're going to find every single, there's a local compost place that's not really happy with me right now because of that video we did a while back. And, you know, and I'm sure there's a number of others too. I'm not making friends around here. And frankly, I don't care. I made it very clear to the person who told me that, you know, when, you know, if I'm critical of what you're doing in terms of your compost making, and you're upset because I'm, quote, picking on small businesses. No, I wasn't picking on small businesses. I was picking on everybody who was selling this stuff. And we all gave it an honest shot, son. You were there. And So the point of it is, here's my rebuttal to that. Okay, I'm a journeyman electrician with nearly 30 years experience. Let's say I go out and wire a house. I tell the people, hey, I'm a journeyman electrician. I can do this. Or I go out here and I install a motor at a factory, or let's say it's a, whatever the case, pick whatever application you want. let's say the motor burns up. Let's say the house burns down. Well, and let's say it's because I wired something poorly or did it wrong. I think that speaks to my incompetence. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Or I mean, an even more accurate comparison is that you go there and the wire of the house, but literally nothing works.
Okay.
Like literally all of the claims you make, none of them even work within the house. That's the equivalent.
Okay. So would it be any different for a person who goes out, creates a compost business, and you're selling compost, you put it in these bags, you put the fancy writing on there, and everybody thinks they're getting a quality product, spending premium dollar for it, and it's garbage. And you think I shouldn't say anything about it? Here's an idea. Learn how to make it right. There's ways. We spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars learning how to do this from multiple people all over this planet, to be honest with you, and then came up with a system where we combine this, that, that, and this. So, yeah, if you make garbage compost, and I'm looking at it under the microscope, first of all, son, what's the problem? When you put compost in a bag and seal it up, what's the number one problem you're going to run into?
Everything just suffocates. So you're going to run out of oxygen. Any place where your compost comes into contact with plastic is going to create like an anaerobic layer. Now, if there's no open end anywhere on the bag, then there's no respiration at all. And everything all the way down to the core of the compost bag is going to go anaerobic. But like, let's say you're putting it in a bucket temporarily, because I know where some people are thinking, like if you can put it in a bucket temporarily, there's no issue with that. Like I have some sitting in the bucket right now for tomorrow morning. But yeah, that's the issue with putting it in a bag, is that everywhere that it comes in contact is going to go anaerobic. And then if it's closed, it's eventually the whole thing is going to go anaerobic, which is like negative consequences on your garden.
And everything's going to die in that bag. And then worse yet, if you really want to speed up that process, stick those bags out in the sun. That's why when you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and you buy that stuff off the shelf and they tell you it's compost, or I love that one, mushroom compost. Yeah, strangely enough, that mushroom compost didn't have a sink. We couldn't find any mushroom in it. So anyway, here's the good news. I said all that to say that I took a little side path because honestly, I will be critical and I expect people to be critical of me. If I'm telling you that I got a premium product here and it's, you know, it's supposed to do a certain thing, but it does not, should you be critical of me, small business or not? I don't care. I mean, if I'm sitting here selling some stuff that's garbage, I expect to be called out on it, especially if people spent good money to get what I have. So I fully expect the criticism coming back at me. And there are times where people reach out to me and say, hey, it doesn't happen that much anymore. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are trying to get something for nothing. Believe me, folks, that happens more than you know.
Well, I would say the biggest one, as far as you guys, the biggest one would be the comfrey. And the biggest failing point in the comfrey is that people either put the comfrey into like rich of soil because comfrey really likes bad soil, or they left it out in a bag and didn't plant it or didn't refrigerate it or whatever. That's usually user error on that part.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, that's usually what happens there. And, you know, if you're using bone sauce, clearly, if you got a next door neighbor feeding the deer, I'm not sure how well it's going to work. I mean, it has worked in some areas where that happens. But if your neighbor's feeding the deer, well, you can't complain when it's not working as effectively as you'd like. But the point of it being, I will continue to call out the people that sell junk. I can't stand as a consumer, and I guarantee there's a bunch in this audience right now listening live, and the ones who are listening later. Look, we all work hard for our money. Money is tighter than it's ever been. So if I spend money on a product and it doesn't do what it's supposed to, like I bought this tripod to film videos with, the leg broke off of it in the first day. Son, tell them about that pitchfork we bought from the supply. What happened the first day?
It wasn't even a pitchfork. It was a potato fork. Like it was supposed to be even sturdier and it bent flipping compost. Like it wasn't even like rock. We weren't doing anything we weren't supposed to do with it. And it bent flipping compost, a potato fork.
Yeah. So it's that kind of stuff that goes on. Look, folks, we got to police ourselves. I mean, if I get something wrong, man, I'm going to try to do everything I can to make it right. But you know, when somebody's out here selling junk, I don't care who you are. If I know that it's junk and I can prove it and I got the goods, I'm going to call it out. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm not buying this. You can do what you want, but I'm not going to buy it. So anyway, I bought some of this highly touted mushroom compost. I think they wanted $75 for a cubic yard of this stuff. Did the video about a month ago. And I'm giving you guys like the sneak peek on what's probably, maybe I'll put this out on Sunday. I'm not sure. I'm sure nobody's going to be watching on the 4th of July. But anyway, I'll put it out on Sunday, not because I'm worried about, you know, getting a bunch of views on it. It's because it's going to be helpful for a lot of folks out there, especially with some of the options that we have coming up as far as how to do this stuff yourself. Well, anyway, took this cubic yard. I took half of it, made a thermophilic compost pile out of it, took the other half. And all I did was just put compost extract on it. I also used, you know, some of the other amendments that I typically use. And son, you're not going to believe the numbers, man. So the minimum standard for biocomplete compost, according to Dr. Elaine Ingham, is 135 micrograms per gram of bacteria and fungi. That's for, you know, 50-50 ratio. This stuff, after a month, both piles are over 300. That's within a month. And every other thing, the and folks, I know it sounds like we're speaking Greek here, but there are minimum standards that you have to have. 135 micrograms per gram. And William, you were out there at a place where people were apparently struggling just to hit the basic numbers on this, huh?
Oh, yeah. It was one of the places that Dr. Elaine Ingham, like, it was one of the only places that she recommended getting compost from. And these people had never made what's called biocomplete compost. Now they were making, I would say they're making better compost than what anybody else is selling. And she was probably thinking at the time, like, all right, of all the options, this is the best option that anybody's going to have on a commercial scale. But even then they weren't even coming close to biocomplete. They weren't understanding how we were doing it at the time.
Yeah. So for me to be able to take this junk, and it was junk, folks, we looked at it. I mean, there was no fungi, no nematodes, no protozoa, no arthropods, no earthworms, no nothing. Folks, I kid you not, in a month, this stuff, to bare minimum, is 135, and we are well over 300. And that, I think we actually took that recording a week and a half ago. So it's only going to get better as time goes by. So folks, what the moral to the story is that we're devising a way. And you can even speed it up once we come out and give you, you know, William's testing Dr. Will's stuff right now in his own place. And, folks, you're not going to believe how quickly you, so if you had to, man, I really hate telling folks this, but if you have just one good compost pile, you could probably make compost indefinitely with the awful stuff. I feel like I got to give people shortcuts right now because I think time is short regarding all the crazy things that are going on right now. So if you're able, using our methods, and when I say our methods, I'm talking me, Michelle, and William, using our methods, if we're able to turn this stuff around in a month, man, there's some serious hope out there for a lot of folks, but you're going to have at least one good compost pile, or I'm trying to scale up what I'm doing here to perhaps. And I'll probably start with the people on Patreon first saying, okay, hey, I'm going to need some volunteers here, man. you know, go out there, put my stuff on yours. To be science, it has to be replicated. So William's over there doing it right now. And I'm probably going to get a few more people to do it. Probably need to send some to Eric Sider and get him squared away on this too. But once we have a method where people can transform lousy garbage into really, really garden gold, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am about this, because this is a big deal, man. I mean, if you can go out there, I mean, honestly, son, how this stuff is so bad, they really ought to be giving it to me.
Well, I mean, this is the perfect application. So whenever I write up an order of operations, which is like what to do in what order for a consultation, whenever it comes to filling the raised beds and stuff, if raised beds are applicable to your property, I always say buy the cheapest soil, cheapest fill dirt you can find, because you're going to end up inoculating it and changing it anyway. You can spend top dollar on this high quality compost, in quotes, but you're still going to have to, it's going to be the same procedure as the crappy fill dirt. But like being able to buy your compost, because now you can go to those large scale city municipalities that hopefully aren't using like wastewater, like water treatment plant wastewater and stuff like that. try not to go that route. But if you find one that isn't doing it, then you can get that for very, very cheap. Like the one in Lawrence, you could fill up your truck for $10. That's an option. And then you can fill your raised beds that way, and then you can inoculate it with just the one good pile of compost and then continue to make compost after that. But it gets people going faster if they're able to inoculate just basically organic matter. That's basically what it is just decomposed organic matter, kind of.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping, even if you got that stuff, because I know I'm, after the work we've done so far, even if you got that bio sludge garbage, the cool thing about it is combining, I'm going to kind of give you all the cliff notes on this real quick, is that what we're finding out is that Dr. Will has a lot of facultative organisms, meaning that they can go either way. And they only really become activated when there is a problem. So let's say you got too much, too much aluminum in your soil, which a lot of that's going on right now based on the stuff they're dropping from the sky. So his stuff will come alive, eat that stuff up until it brings it into balance and makes it bioavailable for a plant. And then even his stuff will eat up all the bad stuff while ours puts in all the good stuff. So if you can combine both, if you can use Dr. Will's method along with ours, we're finding out that not only do you cross that finish line, man, we're doing it in record time and it's blowing my mind. In fact, Dr. Will, when he was here, he ended up taking away like a, you know, I gave him like a 5-gallon bucket of some of the compost. He went back there and did some scalar testing on it, man. He's blowing up my phone like, hey, dude, how do I get a whole truckload of this? I said, you mean like you want to fill up the back of your truck? He says, no, man, I'm talking like a tractor trailer. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? He says, man, I looked at this stuff and the vitality on this stuff is so far off the charts. It's blowing my mind. He says, I haven't seen any stuff like this before. And I'm like, well, man, I make this stuff in small batches. So anyway, folks, long story short, what I'm trying to do is see if I can't scale things up a little bit, because look, you don't just build this compost and walk away, man. You got to manage this stuff. So, yeah. And that's what a lot of people don't want to do. I mean, even though when it's off and running, it's kind of managing. You just need to make sure the moisture's good and make sure it's covered and out of the weather. There are things that we're doing that I know other people ain't. So that's what we're going to keep doing. There was a question up here regarding compost a moment ago, son. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, I see it. But also, homesteading pastors in the chat. How's it going?
Oh, Pastor Lon, what's up? Pray for you every day, bro. Pray for you and your family. Pastor Lon, boy, you just made my day.
Yeah. We got a question from S. Michelle Brown. She's asking, if we make the 18-day compost like on William's channel, will our numbers automatically be good? Now, I answered in the chat just briefly saying, as long as you let after you're done with your flips, and you don't have to do all 9 flips, like there are easier methods on the flips, but as soon as you're done with the flips, just let it rest and come down to ambient temperature. And after it comes down to ambient temperature, then without getting a test, you can generally say you're going to have like pretty decent compost. You can't necessarily say it's biocomplete without testing it, but you're going to have pretty decent compost and definitely light years better than anything you can buy at the store.
That's a fact. But this is part of why I want to do. Now, this is going to be the hardest class I've ever done. The only in-person compost class William and I have ever, or at least I've ever done, was at that Homesteaders United Jamboree. Now, that was basically showing you how to flip a compost and also how to make a compost pile using the methods we use. I would love to be able to do a class. And if I can ever get the bandwidth to do it, I would love to do one where we show compost in varying stages of becoming compost, and what the thing that's impossible to convey in a video is what it should smell like, what it feels like, and what it looks. Well, some of those things you can convey. It should look like a 70% cocoa bar. It should smell like good forest soil. It shouldn't smell like the stuff you get from a municipality where there's chemicals. I don't even know what that smell is that's coming off this stuff, but it shouldn't smell like that. It should smell like you're in the middle of a forest. That's what it should smell like. And son, tell them about the moisture. What should it be like?
50%. So if you get like a handful, like with both hands, a handful, and you squeeze it as hard as you can, not like you're trying to beat a record or anything, but you squeeze it pretty hard, you should have one drop of water form and fall. It shouldn't be a stream. It shouldn't be a bunch of drops. It should be one drop, form, and fall. And if it's a little bit wetter than that, then maybe open it up, break it open a little bit, or just don't water it. And if it's drier than that, then go ahead and add some water. Now, if it's in the curing stage, you don't have to completely like flip it in order to add the appropriate water because you have made compost. If it's in the curing stage, you can add all the water to the surface and it'll flow through as needed.
Now, here's another thing. If you get it to the point, look, this is why I say you got to manage compost. Once you get to the point where it's like bone dry, okay, everything just went dormant or dead, one or the other or both.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you don't want, folks. That is exactly what you don't want. So that's why, I mean, there's other little nifty tricks out there. I really, really, really want to do a comprehensive compost class, maybe over a weekend or something like that. I'm going to see if the good Lord will somehow make that happen for us. But right now I'm just covered up so bad. But I really want to train a bunch of people that can go out here and make this stuff, because anytime we've done anything even close to Asheville where we live, people are all about, yeah, they'll go to a drum circle, but they won't go out here. If it means any physical work, man, there's some people, you know, Ben and Denise are always there, but outside of them and a handful of others, and some of them are in this audience, and I can't thank you enough. There's a lot of people that just, they talk a big game, and then when it's time to lay down them cards, man, they ain't nowhere to be found. So, yeah. Son, what's going on your end?
So on that compost aspect, I'll be teaching a compost class over at KSL, and I did one at Midwest Preparedness Conference. I want to do, like you were saying, like one in stages, where it's like, I'll also be teaching a compost class for the local, it's like a local apothecary here in DeKalb. So if you guys are in the Eastern Texas region, or you're willing to make a trip, it's going to be in August. I'll talk about it here before too long, but if you shoot me an email, I'll be able to give you the actual details. But that'll be fun. I'm kind of curious how big of a local crowd we can drum up that's interested in compost. I'm hoping it's better than what I think and what you're probably thinking. But as far as me, yeah, just picked up that car today, picked up that gun for my wife, and then tomorrow I'll actually be going over. I'll be getting up bright and early, going over to a friend's house to show him how to clip chicken wings, because he got a whole bunch of chickens now and they're all flying over the fence. He's actually the guy that helped build the hospital I was born in. Did a consultation for him when he came out here. And then, yeah. And then after that, we're going to be applying soil extract at his house. And then tomorrow evening, I'll be going to apply soil extract at another consultation's house over in Gladewater. But yeah, I don't really have anything planned for 4th of July. I don't know. It seems kind of, I've been kind of rethinking all of the national holidays and what we celebrate and like the outcome of what has happened, like Thanksgiving. Like every Thanksgiving, we're celebrating like a broken, what's it called? Like a broken agreement, broken promises. Like look at the outcome of the country. And then 4th of July, knowing more about the founding fathers and what they were really into, it also gives me like pause on celebrating that stuff. It's just something I'm taking a pause on and rethinking, but I don't know if we're giving power to the wrong thing by celebrating some of these things.
I'm right there with you, folks. There's a documentary out there I recommend. I've told a number of people about it, and this is one of many I could recommend. It's called The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers. Yeah, you can put it in a search engine. I'm sure you can find it. It's rather long, but like so many other things, you find out that everything you were officially told, like the official historian of Congress, a guy named Charles Thompson, he was like, man, if you folks really knew, I mean, he burned his manuscript of what actually happened around the time of the Revolution, and they concocted, he admitted that they basically concocted the story we now know. But you know, I'm not gonna break all the sacred cows right now. the only holidays, it's funny he mentions that the only holidays we ever really celebrate around here is 4th of July and Thanksgiving. And 4th of July, we're going to talk a little bit about that today. In fact, I may just jump into it here in a minute, but we got, so let me just go ahead and answer this question and we'll move on. What was that mineral you were talking about that makes your pea blue? Why do you take it and does it add any benefits to your compost? Okay, great question. So, and that's from Silver Sags. Sage. Okay, Silver Sage. I got these glasses on, so give me a break. So, anyway, it's called methylene blue. I don't recommend it necessarily. I know a lot of people are just saying, hey, take methylene, this and that. You know, I got mine from Dr. Will, and, you know, I know that it's good stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there selling bad stuff. So the idea is that it helps, especially in sunlight, in UV light, it helps your mitochondria really work over time and do wonderful things. That's in a nutshell. I won't go into any more detail than that right now. But as far as putting urine in your compost pile, that is one of the best things you can do. And I talk about it a lot on Patreon. And I do it. In fact, I don't waste my urine around here. Not usually, believe me. If I pee anywhere around here, it's into it. I mean, I'm not trying to gross anybody out, but honestly, it's one of the most wasted materials you have out there. It is fantastic for heating up a compost pile. It's great because if you check out the work of Dr. Edward Group, G-R-O-U-P, I went through his course on urotherapy or urine therapy, and that was one of the things that he had talked about in great detail. Now, from the vitalism, and Dr. Jack Cruz has even talked about this to a great deal, that after the Flexner report came out years ago, that all the things like the chiropractors, the MDs, the naturopaths, they were all on the equal playing field. When the Rockefellers funded the Flexner report, it was done to push everybody into allopathic medicine or MDs, you know, and a lot of these guys think that means medical deity. Anyway, the vitalism, even Jack Cruz, an MD, a neurosurgeon, has even talked about all of that stuff that these guys talked about. And that's why I've been going on. I mean, Jack Cruz, he may have a potty mouth, but man, his stuff definitely works. I mean, no two ways about that. And he gives you all the reasons why all of this vitalism, how urine was used for millennia, how it was used in things like composting, because the microbes in there will adapt. It's like some of the old timers would take seeds and put them under their tongue for a minute or two before they plant them, because now the seed is imprinted. This is going to sound like pseudoscience to a lot of people out there, but a lot of old timers know this, that if you can take that seed, stick it, put your DNA on it somehow or another, stick it into the ground, and seed is going to produce fruit, berries, you know, whatever the case may be, that is adapted to you. It's made for you. So what are you told to do when a jellyfish, when you get a jellyfish sting? Told to pee on it. Why? Because your body immediately makes the antidote as soon as you have an injury, okay? So why aren't you told that with bee stings? Why aren't you told that with any other thing that happens? Only with jellyfish? I mean, really? Well, I got news for you. I've done it on stings, and it works. So I knew Dr. Group was on to something. So it's the same exact process over and over again. If you can take your DNA somehow and put it into that pile, you know, in the Army, we had this old saying, what makes the green grass grow? And then the response was the red, red blood. Go to every battlefield out there. What do you see? Every place where blood was spilled, you're going to see very green grass. And you figure the Civil War went from what, 1861 to 1865. And look at that ground to this day. Gettysburg, Antietam, all these places. Yeah, I mean, nobody wants to. I mean, there was obvious, you know, unbelievable carnage in these places, but I think you get the point.
Yeah, there's other routes.
It's why one of the key things in the compost I make is every single batch, believe me, there's something, there's some life, there's blood that was spilled that's in that compost. I guarantee it. Like in the one I got right now, a baby sheep that didn't make it. There's also a chicken in there. Somebody sent their rooster over this way. Wasn't enough meat on him to make a meal. So I just figured, okay, man, I could use him in this pile. That's where he's going to be better spent. So I know it's a long-winded answer to your question, but man, I'm telling you, that stuff, that urine, all of it works in your pile. Get your whole family's urine. You can pour it all in there. It's another source of nitrogen. And honestly, that compost, these things, we seem to think everything in a reductionistic world. And what I'm realizing is the more I get closer to how the good Lord put it into motion, the more I get steps back to me. So sorry for the long-winded answer there, but
Yeah. An important note, though, with the jellyfish stings and the bees stings and all that, it only works with your own urine. So, like, it ain't going to work. You're just going to have somebody else's pee on you and be in pain if somebody else's pee on, if somebody else pees
on
you.
That would suck so. Twice. Yeah. So it works better if it's coming from you. But there are cases where other people have done it too, where it does work with other people. But your body, it works better with your own body, as he said. So Redemption Shield, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Remember, every single show, y'all, I'm G'd up from the feet up, and I mean grounded. My bare feet right now are on this Redemption Shield grounding mat. 10% off with promo code PERMA. Wave Watch. When I was out there getting my hair done today, I was getting a haircut. I don't get my hair done. I don't get my hair done. Get my hair did. Actually, this lady, I told her, this is the first time in recent memory I got a haircut that I actually liked. I went in there, and typically when there's a lady over the age of, let's say, 60, and they cut my hair, man, I know I'm not really going to like it. Because I tell them, look, I want it as bald as you can get it all the way on the sides, because that means I ain't got to come back for a while. I'll say, as bald as you can get it from about an inch above my ear all the way down. I mean, bald, bald, bald. And anyway, she's in there. She kept looking at my wrist, and she breaks out this. I thought she was going to bust out a straight razor. I'm like, man, boy, I hit the jackpot on this lady. Man, look at that, man. My hair. The size of my head is as smooth as a prom queen's thighs. So I'm telling you what, man, it is. She absolutely like shaved this thing down. And I'm like, okay, cool. I can go maybe a month without getting a haircut now. But yeah, this is the first one. And anyway, I get up. She keeps looking at my wrist and she says, what on earth? Where'd you find a watch that big? And I said, no, this here's a Wave Watch. And so we had a good conversation about it. I told her what it did for your mom concerning endometriosis. And she's like, I might have to break down and get one of them. So anyway, Wave Watch Billy 100 will get you $100 off of that. Coming up soon, William's going to be teaching there, and a lot of other cool people are going to be there. Kentucky Sustainable Living, that's going to be July 18th through the 20th. Then Homesteaders United Jamboree, that's going to be August 28th through the 30th. I will not be there, but they're going to have that thing just the same. So we're getting kind of long in the tooth, so I'm going to go ahead and skip over the good news section and just tell you real quick, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA, because I don't want to mess around. I want to make sure I get into this, folks, because I put a lot of time into a fair amount of time into trying to prep this show, and, you know, William as well. Look, 4th of July, it's coming around. Before I get into that, folks, I can't even believe I almost forgot to tell you one of the big hacks that you ought to be doing for 4th of July. So given the world that we live in right now, everything's on a knife's edge. Let's be honest here. Things are crazy. Things are weird. So as a former U.S. Army sapper, there was a video William and I did a while ago, and I didn't go through as much detail as I would like to regarding what I know about this stuff of what you can do with fireworks. Let me just put it at this. Folks, if you ever wondered if you could have a low-tech intrusion detector, look, you can buy them right now. And that's exactly what I buy every 4th of July. Because keep in mind, things like gunpowder and stuff like that are what's called hygroscopic, meaning that it takes on atmospheric air if you don't keep it in the right conditions. So fireworks, given enough time, they do kind of go stale and they won't work. But all those things where you pull the string and then they got confetti coming out the end, do you think maybe in a certain circumstance, in a grid down scenario or whatever the case may be, that you might be able to use those if you had to go to sleep and you need to know if somebody's sneaking up on you? Could you put a tripwire onto that? A low-tech tripwire onto that and have, you know, something that would alert you if somebody was coming? I dare say you do, especially in the high avenues of approach. I did a video on that. There was other things we would do, too. U.S. Army Sapper School, man, you learn all kinds of cool stuff, you know, fish hooks at eye level, crazy, using rat traps. You want to mess somebody's day up bad, man. Use some rat traps. But think about it. You can use a mouse or a rat trap to snap onto a chem light, and then it alerts the person. Think about it. If you're an intruder and you're sneaking by and you're trying to get to Billy's Jungle Palace of Love or whatever the case may be, And then all of a sudden you hear this smack of a rat trap because you tripped it. And all of a sudden you see that chem light, you know that your cover's blown. You're going to do one of two things. You're either going to retreat, which is 99.9% of the time of what you're going to do, because you're going to assume whether somebody's there or not, you're going to assume that somebody knows your presence is there. And you're going to expect to get lit up because guess what? This chem light just went off. Or if you have a poppet, one of those, I mean, those simple confetti poppets, I mean, they can't cost but a couple of bucks for a bag of them, I wouldn't imagine. You could use those. All you got to do, just use your imagination on this a little bit, folks. Use those as tripwires. I do it. It is a low-tech way. You could even use them at the entrance of your house. Because I got news for you. At night, even with night vision on, you can't see these things. They're so small, but once it makes a fair, if you're walking in the woods or you're walking up on somebody, it makes a loud enough pop to where anybody who sets it off is going to realize that their cover's blown. And they're so inexpensive, you can put them everywhere. So think about those things, y'all. Rat traps, inexpensive fireworks. Now, as far as some of the other things you can do with those fireworks, no, I'm not going to tell you about those. But just keep in mind that there are low-tech solutions to your security, and you can use them anywhere. You can even use them in your own house because it's not going to burn the place down. You could do it in any number of places. I mean, say you sleep upstairs. These are things you could set up. Low-tech, easy, very easy solutions. And like I said, even with night vision goggles, it's going to be tough to see, especially if you use the right stuff or natural materials out there. So, that's one of the hacks I wanted to let everybody know on the eve of 4th of July. Okay, so speaking of 4th of July, remember I told you just a second ago, I didn't expect to get into it, but I told you about that documentary called The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers and how everybody ought to check it out. And that's just one of many, many sources out there. Check out the work of a guy named Anthony Sutton. Everything you thought you knew about World War II, about the Nazis, about the Bolsheviks, about all these other people, when you check out Anthony Sutton's work, you're going to realize you were lied to. Check out Carol Quigley, you know, Bill Clinton's mentor. And some of the driest reading you're ever going to find out there. But they basically tell you that all the way going from the beginning, or actually maybe about 30 years prior to World War I, that we're living under an obvious conspiracy and nobody wants to talk about it. Well, let's talk about 4th of July and what nobody's ever told you about it. If I were to go ask everybody in this audience right now, why did we fight the American Revolution? And if you're William's age, which he's 30, or up to my age, or even older, I dare say 9 out of 10 people, if they even know these days, they're going to tell you it was no taxation without representation. Sam, what would you say if somebody were to just come up and tell you or ask you?
From what I've been taught, no taxation without representation.
Right. Yeah. All of us have been taught that.
Yeah.
So
the whole Boston Tea Party, all of that. Yeah. That's what everybody saw.
Yeah, everybody's taught that. And we're told, yeah, we fought a revolution over a 3% tax. Folks, I'm going to use this as a microcosm of history to explain that everything you think you know. Everybody told you Abraham Lincoln was a good guy. I told you he was a polecat, and I can prove it. Everybody, all the people you've been told about in history were wonderful. You might want to reexamine. And all the people you were told were bad, you might want to reexamine that as well. You know, it's strange to me that Stalin killed far more people than Hitler ever dreamed of. Pol Pot killed even more than all of them combined, but we never talk about those people. Well, let me ask you something. If you were going to make a list of grievances, well, son, let me just ask you, since you're right here in front of me, if you were going to make a list of grievances, imagine yourself as a 10-year-old again, and you didn't like cleaning up your room and all the other things that mom and dad had you doing. Now, the most important stuff, where would you put that in that list of, let's say you, okay, like the Declaration of Independence has 27 items. Where would you put the most important thing?
Most important one is either going at the very, very beginning or a stamp on it at the end.
I would dare say most people would say the very same thing. Well, what if I told everybody out there of those 27 grievances that are in the Declaration of Independence, no taxation without representation is number 17. I've been talking about this for years, and other people have hijacked it from me. I don't care as long as it gets out there. But, of course, they give no attribution on that. But anyway, no taxation without representation was number 17. So if that was the reason why we fought the revolution, like William said, wouldn't you put it at the top of the list or at the bottom of the list? Because in my life, I don't recall ever making a list of grievances and putting the and burying the most important thing. Like you said, you want to put an exclamation point on it. If anything, I would put it at the end. So in the interest of time, because I know we don't speak the way we did back in 1776, obviously. And when Jefferson put all this together, you know, obviously with the help of Franklin and a number of others, well, several others, not a number of others necessarily. But anyway, when he put this together, it just blows my mind. This is one of the easy examples of history, folks, that everything you've been told is a lie. Everything you've been told about the Civil War, it wasn't over slavery. It wasn't any of the things you were told about. And once again, I can prove that. Perhaps I should do a show on that as well. And all the good guys and the bad guys you were told about in the Civil War, you've been lied about that too. People would probably lose their minds if I told you the top five people I want to meet in history. Two on that list is Stonewall Jackson, and the other one is Robert E. Lee. Trust me, I got good reasons for those guys being on my list. But anyway, back to the Declaration of Independence. So I put it in modern vernacular to make it easier to translate. These were the things that people thought were more important in 1776 than no taxation without representation, which was obviously pretty darn important. It made the list. But right at the top of the list, and like I said, I'm going to say it in modern vernacular so everybody understands what I'm saying, because we don't speak the same anymore. But I do encourage, and I encourage everybody out there, go back and read. In fact, make it a family thing. Go back and say, look, hey, let's talk about this 4th of July. Let's talk about that before you set off the fireworks and eat the cake or whatever. You know, let's talk about the grievances. And is there any overlay of what's going on today? So I'll just kind of run through this a little bit. Number one, this was number one on the list. Won't let us pass laws that we need for the good of the people. In other words, he's blocking. And when I say he, they're talking to a king. When I'm making references now, I'm not only talking to our president, but I'm talking about all the people in the corridors of power. Okay. Won't let us pass laws that we need for the good of the people. Basically, he was blocking unnecessary legislation. Next one. He made us wait forever to approve basic laws, hoping that we'll give up. And in fact, I mean, you think about it. He was governing from all the way across the pond. So to make any decisions, had to go all the way back there, and he would sit on them. In fact, if you read some of the Federalist Papers, you'll find out that this revolution could have easily gone on 30 years prior, because this didn't just happen overnight. They kept appealing and appealing and appealing to the king over and over and over and over again. And then finally, 3% of the population over here finally said, enough is enough. I am ready to spill blood over this. That's how bad it got. And many of them lost their fortunes. I mean, and that's another thing, you know, people fail to, you know, where Arlington Cemetery came from. Robert E. Lee was offered command of the Union forces. You never told about this in the history books. He was offered command of the Union forces, and he basically told the, it may have been Stanton, I can't remember, but he says, look across the Potomac. That's Arlington House over there. He lived at Arlington, okay? That was his home right across that Potomac. But you never told about that. He was offered full command, but you never told about that either. And then finally, the quartermaster in the Union, and I know I'm jumping all over here, but this is important. The quartermaster lost his son. I want to say it might have been at the Battle of Antietam. And he says, okay, well, when he was told, hey, we need a place to bury all these boys, guess where the first body was? He right outside the front porch of Arlington House, so Robert E. Lee could never live there again. Yeah. Not told about that history. Anyway, number three, won't let local governments make urgent decisions unless he approves, even when immediate action is needed. So he was micromanaging all these emergencies over here. And, you know, like you had to go to the king, even though, you know, things were falling apart and he didn't care. You know, he's like, hey, these are my holdings. And that's exactly what King George said. These are my holdings and I'm not going to lose any of it. Well, he lost all of it. Well, I'm not going to get into that history, but later on, he kind of got a lot of it back. But that's not until about the Civil War. Anyway, he made it impossible. This is number four. Made it impossible for colonial governments to work with, to work by constantly interfering and dissolving them. He was destroying local and self-government. Sound familiar? Sound like something that's going on right now? Sounds like everything legislated from the top? Or am I just imagining this? Number five, after getting rid of local governments, he refused to let us elect new ones, leaving power vacuums, essentially, and clearly a lot of chaos when things like that happen. Number six, he blocked immigration and naturalization of foreigners, hurting our growth. So he was restricting population and the expansion that they needed at that time. Number seven, this is all before no taxation without representation, y'all. Number seven, he prevents us from expanding to new lands. There was a reason why he wanted to do that. So he was restricting the frontier growth that they wanted to do at that time. And obviously, you know, people were like, okay, man, we were getting a lot of people over here. We're starting, we need farmland, and he's not letting us do it.
Hey, Dad, real quick. On number five, there's one thing that I wanted to point out when I was going over these earlier. The exact wordage is, or verbiage is, he has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. Like, there's something passive-aggressive about that statement.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you're a big old man over there stopping us from governing ourselves.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's exactly why, you know, I'm going through, and I put it in modern vernacular just for ease, so I wouldn't have to explain things along the way, because some words are used that are going to be a little troublesome for a modern audience. Number eight. He made judges dependent on him alone. He controls their pay and jobs. Well, I think we see a lot of that going on as well. He created many new offices and sent swarms of officials to harass and tax us. Basically, this bureaucratic overload that we have right now, we just saw it in the Supreme Court ruling with Trump. All of these lesser judges are saying, no, we can't do that, can't do that. So anyway, number 10. He kept his armies among us. This is a big one. Kept his armies among us during peacetime without our consent. So he's got standing armies here without a cause. Folks, I know we've lived by that all of our lives right now, but that was not a thing at the time. Okay. Even Eisenhower talked during his farewell address, in fact, about how we would beat our swords into plowshares when we had to create war. And we had it wasn't the Department of Defense. It was the War Department. So you knew exactly what it was for. Now we call it the Department of Defense when we know that that's not exactly at all what it is. So anyway, standing armies, and Thomas Jefferson and a number of other founding fathers wrote about this too. Standing armies was a very awful idea, and it still is. In fact, the founding fathers, boy, they saw definitely through the times we're living in right now. Anyway, number 11, he made the military superior to civilian authority. Well, I mean, he was undermining civilian control when you get down to brass tacks on this, folks. This is why the civilian leadership controls, or is supposed to control, the military. It's not the other way around, but that's not the way King George had it. Number 12, he let soldiers go unpunished for crimes they committed against the colonists. Even John Adams defended the guys who, I can't remember what the name of that incident was, where anyway, these soldiers would come over here, blast, you know, colonists and everything. They put them on trial, but the king was like, I don't care what your ruling is. That's not how it's rolling, bro. I overrule it. And so, so soldiers had immunity for committing some pretty heinous acts right here in the Americas. Number 13, and we're still not to the taxation without representation. He imposed military law and used foreign mercenaries to enforce it. So, these were martial law tactics, obviously. He forced us to house and feed soldiers in our homes. Okay, this was a quartering of troops. Folks, if you go into the Constitution, or rather the Bill of Rights, what's number three? It prohibits the quartering of troops in peacetime, and, well, it limits... Well, it prohibits the quartering of troops in peacetime and limits it in the time of war. But, man, you know, there was a time in America where these guys would show up to your house and you were expected to look after them. I mean, feed them, house them, a whole nine yards. And, man, some of the stories that came out at that time were pretty unbelievable. But, yeah, let's see here. Number 15, He protected British troops by fake trials or no trials at all. I mean, there was no justice at all. This is one of the big things that they kept going on and on and on, setting letter, you know, petitions back and forth to England. And number 16, he cut off our trade with the rest of the world. So this was serious economic warfare. And this was one of the things, this is why America became so great when they threw off the Brits. Is because now all of a sudden there was no taxes, there was no nothing, folks. It would blow your mind before 1913 just how free this country was. And it was losing it from the time of the Declaration of Independence, really all the way down. I mean, until this time, we are a shadow of what we once were. And then number 17, he taxed us without permission, basically no taxation without representation. So we're told number 17, this is why I'm saying, folks, you've got to examine your history. Napoleon said it's a lie agreed upon. That's what history is for most, in most cases. And then number 18, he denied us the right to a fair trial by jury, the Sixth Amendment. Okay. So that was important enough to put in there. Number 19, he's taking us overseas for fake trials. Check this out. You'd be supposedly convicted. It was like bring the guilty SOB in. That's exactly how it was. So you were accused of something by some commissar and then brought over to England, dressed down, and then, you know, you may or may not come home. So that was happening quite a bit. Number 20, got rid of our local laws and imposed his own. So he was overriding local autonomy, and it didn't matter what happened on the local level. Kind of remind you of a lot of what's going on right now.
But also with that, it would change to his will. Without anybody really even knowing. That was in kind of combination earlier on in the grievances as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's some of this stuff that almost seems a little bit repetitive. I mean, I guess they're like putting a stamp down. Hey, you got it the first time, right, Jack? So, you know, some of these kind of build on the others. And on this, obviously, you can see how in the Bill of Rights, a lot of these became what they were. Like number three, number six, to a certain extent, I'd say number five in the Bill of Rights.
But also look at what's not being repeated. Look at what is being repeated and look at what's not being repeated. Taxation without representation isn't something that's being repeated over and over again. Yes. The laws without any involvement is what is being repeated over and over again.
Becoming serfs and slaves is exactly, if we get down to brass tacks, that's exactly what's being said over and over and again, but in different language. Number 21. Canceled our charters, changed our government. This is to your point, and took away our rights. Erosion of any kind of legal protection. We see that same thing happening right now. I don't know where a lot of folks stand on this, but honestly, when a person is over here, let's say it's a student, okay, well, you're entitled to our Constitution. Remember, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution was, it was a lock, a padlock on the government of what they can't do. Go read it for yourself. Go read it for yourself. That's exactly what it is. But when you're telling me you're going to deport somebody because they said something, they could talk all the crap in the world about America, but the second they say anything about Israel, they're on the first thing smoking back to their country of origin. Explain that one to me. So number 22, he no longer recognizes our laws and declares he controls, basically controls all of us, a declaration of absolute power. And that's even, you can see that Thomas Jefferson lays that out before they even get into the number of, into the grievances. So number 23, he's waging war against us even in peacetime, acts of war against American citizens. And that was pretty evident when the redcoats are coming. That was war. And they told them to lay down their arms, and they said exactly what Leonidas told the 300 at Thermopylae, or he said in the presence of the 300, or what we're told he said at the 300 at Thermopylae, at the Battle of Thermopylae, come and take them. That's exactly what they said. And yeah, a lot of colonists died there, but you know what? They knew there was a fight on their hands, and it was a war of attrition. I mean, George Washington, if you go back and look at it, lost nearly every single engagement except for the ones that really, really counted. And you know, when he crossed the Delaware, look, in modern days, I don't know what they teach kids now. They probably tell, you know, they tell everybody, I don't know, in school, they're probably telling these kids George Washington crossed the Delaware because he's going after a chick in Jersey. I don't know. But no, he was going over there to murder Hessians. That's exactly what he was going over there for. And he was doing it with a bunch of broke down guys and barely didn't even have shoes on. And they went over there and attacked and defeated the greatest army on the planet at that time. So
there is a hilarious skit by Shane. He's a comedian named Shane Gillis talking about it. Everybody should check it out. Talk about, Shane Gillis's skit on the Revolutionary War, and it'll have you rolling.
I'll check it out. I mean, but, you know, I guess I threw a little bit of humor in there, but no, he went over there for straight. He liked the killing because it was so fulfilling, and he did it on the other end. And those Hessians, these guys were considered, I mean, these Hessian mercenaries, man, these guys were like the Delta Force of their time. They were just straight killers. And they went over there with a bunch of guys, and they took them out. So anyway, number 24, he burned down our towns, destroyed our coasts, and ruined our lives. Destruction of life and property. Once again, did it summarily. No judge, no jury, no nothing, because he said it. And think about it, son. Despite all these grievances, there were still 97% of the Americans or the colonists at that time that still wanted to be a part of this. Still wanted to be a part. We say, oh, we fought the revolution. No, we didn't do nothing. There was 3% that actually did it, okay? And if we get down to brass tacks, it was probably less than that. But honestly, the rest of them were either indifferent or wanted to stay part of the crown. Yeah, despite
same as now. Businesses.
Exactly. Exactly as we have going on right now. So number 25, brought mercenaries to foreign. Basically, he's talking about the Hessians, known for cruelty. I mean, these guys were just bloodthirsty as all get out. Number 26, encourage rebellions among native tribes and incite them to attack frontier settlements. Now, if you read this in the way it's originally written, it can be misunderstood. basically stoking violence against civilians from the native tribes that were over here trying to keep these guys on the plantation, okay?
Well, think of it this way. What if you have like a deal brokered with a certain Native American tribe? Like you're a colonist, you have a deal brokered with the American tribe, and like it's perfectly fine. Everything's running smoothly. Everything's just fine. And then you have England coming in and then instigating a fight on one side.
That's exactly what happened. So they would create these treaties, and it wasn't the colonists necessarily that broke these treaties. Now, every single treaty that the American government made was broken, but on an individual level, I mean, there was a little more, you know, honestly, if the native tribes at that time had stuck together, it'd still be 13 colonies. I mean, these guys had tactical advantage in every single way, but there was... Yeah, I mean, I can't get into all that right now. We just lack the time to cover it all. But really, when you get down to all of this, yeah, you had these. It's exactly what Rome did, to be honest with you. The reason why Rome was so successful in all of the campaigns they did it, and especially in places like Germania or Germany, and is because people like Julius Caesar would go in there and they would fracture the local communities, put them at each other so they could never unite. And it worked so well there, this Balkanism, it worked so well that every would-be dictator has done the very same thing. And King George did it right here in the American colonies. But these guys were studied at that. I mean, you had founding fathers that would learn an entire language just to read a single book. I mean, that is extraordinary. I mean, this is... Those are things I'm trying to get back, y'all. I mean, things that we all should be trying to get back, because these guys and gals really were super men and women. And ladies, don't, you know, let me not forget about you. I mean, you got people like Abigail Adams, John Adams' wife, who was really the brains of the operation. I mean, she did so much, so incredibly. I mean, things that are unsung, honestly. And I mean, in all their marriage, man, they spent nearly all of it. Oh, no, I think a good half of their marriage away from one another. And because wow. They spent nearly all of half of their marriage away from one another, and they were married a long time. He outlived her for, you know, quite a while, but he was over there in France and in the Netherlands trying to do everything they could to give the boys back here fighting this war against England, everything they needed, people like him and Benjamin Franklin and several others. and even brought his son, John Quincy Adams, along with him. I mean, it's an extraordinary story, y'all. Stories that aren't told in the mainstream history books. So anyway, number 27. This is the last. And I'm going to kind of recap here in a second. But he's ignored all of our peaceful petitions and made things worse each and every time we asked for help. And like I said, I'm paraphrasing a lot of this stuff. So he refused to listen and respond. So what was the last? Okay, if you're making a list of grievances, the last and the first things are probably the things you really want to stick out. So number 27, he ignored all of our peaceful petitions. Number one, he won't let us pass laws that we need for the good of the people. No taxation with representation is smack dab in the middle of this. So when people tell you we fought this revolutionary war over, you know, we fought it over no taxation. No, folks, that ain't true. It ain't true. Nobody in this audience right now made a list of grievances and put the most important thing in the middle of it. Our history has been bastardized. Folks, we've got to rediscover it because we are going to fall for it again. The next garbage they pull, and believe me, they're pick your administration. I am a political atheist, okay? Soldier for Christ, but I'm a political atheist because I recognize on the left, on the right, remember I mentioned that name a little while ago, Carol Quigley, the mentor for Bill Quigley. He wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope. Read that book. And they ended up pulling it off the market because it told you exactly what they do right now. They pretend to be enemies on the left, pretend to be enemies on the right, and they get together. Folks, what just passed today? BBB, Build Back Better. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Big Beautiful Bill. Oh, you think that's an accident? Build Back Better was brought through by the Biden administration, and now the Big Beautiful Bill brought through by the Trump administration. The same people, if the same exact people that are supporting this bill, which, by the way, is an absolute monstrosity, folks, the grievances you saw against King George are dwarfed by what's in that legislation alone. And just one thing I'm just going to hit on right now, right off the bat, on the eve of our 4th of July, the fact that for 10 years, you are not allowed to do anything. No state is allowed to do anything in opposition to anything that's enacted by these tech gurus. Folks, they just brought in four tech nerds off the street, made them lieutenant colonels. You know what a doctor and a dentist go into the military as? You know, people that went to med school and, you know, residency and all that good stuff. They break them off as captains. A captain. A lieutenant colonel is two ranks above a captain. And that's exactly what they brought these tech gurus in as. Do you see this panopticon falling in around us right now? They fought a revolution for far less than what's being imposed upon us right now. And worse is being done by our own consent. Because you same people out there that are okay with this big, beautiful bill would have burned the house down if it was done under the Biden administration. We are being balkanized. The same exact thing that the methods that Julius Caesar used are the same methods being used on us right now, and nobody cares. Folks, get your house in order. Learn these things. Mm-hmm. Learn these things. Anything to add, son?
So Laura Larson just commented something that I was actually thinking about. The BBB looks like 666, but also the numerology behind the B's is 2, B equals 2, B equals 2, B equals 2. Add them all up, you get 6. And then I was trying to count out the letters in Big Beautiful Bill. I wonder what it sounds like backwards too, but there's something that like raises the hair on the back of your neck whenever you hear both. The first time it happened, honestly, was when you said both of them together, as if like they're, I don't know. It's just a gut feeling. It's just a gut feeling. But yeah, something's going on there. I don't know what it is necessarily, but they don't pick these names by accident. Everything that they're doing is intentional because they're not going to waste an opportunity to save themselves of what they view as the karmic guilt. So if they can get the karmic guilt off of their end, they're going to use any opportunity they can. And something as talked about and as big as this, make sure everybody has at least heard it and at least made awareness of it. Everybody's accepting of it. and now it's getting passed, and now you're a part of it. You've agreed to whatever is going to happen from this, and the karmic guilt isn't on their end anymore. It's all a bunch of crap, but this is what they believe.
Yeah, they believe this because your silence is consent in their view. Your silence is, I mean, your silence is absolute consent in all this. So, and that's just one of the many, I mean, this porculous bill, the very, every single thing we've been told regarding our history, folks, to just kind of come full circle with this, everything you've been told about mainstream history, all of it is a lie. All the wonderful things you've been told about all these these people through history, do the examination. Look, while other people are sitting there watching, I don't know, whatever they do on their phones these days, look, that's not what I'm doing. What I do to relax, I read, I educate myself. I mean, this is what I do. I'm a scholar at heart. So, folks, it's all out there. It's all available. It's available to you. But hey, I encourage everybody out there to sit down with your families. Take what you've heard here today. Some of you may have already known it. It's not like this is the first time I've ever talked about it, but this is just one microcosm of many that I could provide regarding the history that you've been told. No, it was not taxation without representation. Nobody would ever bury the most important thing in the middle of a bill, but that's what you've been told. That's what I was told. That's what I was taught. And it's all a manufactured lie. Folks, they can't even get the Battle of the Ironclads in the Civil War right. They tell you it was the Monitor and the Merrimack. It wasn't. And they still teach that garbage in school. It was the Monitor and the Virginia. That's what it was. But you're still being told, I mean, I could just from the top of my head, I can't even tell you, I could probably make a 3-hour program going down list by list by list of all the lies you've been told in history, all that we've all been told. But folks, now it's becoming really, really consequential because here we are at the end of a fourth turning. I won't go through that again, but we are at the end of a fourth turning. All this conflagration, all these crazy things going on, earth changes, weird things happening. Remember I told you it was 80 years from the revolution, roughly 80 years from the revolution to the Civil War, and then 80 years from the Civil War to World War II. It's 80 years from World War II to right now. That's just one pattern, just like King Solomon said, you know, in Ecclesiastes. These things, these cycles happen over and over and over again, and the power elite know very well about them, and these same people are the same people that are lying to us about our history. Folks, do me a favor. Just take a little bit of time. Ask the people around you. Do that experiment I just asked you. Say, why did we fight that revolution? And they say, well, no taxation without representation, if they even know. And then tell them, well, why would you bury that in the middle of a document? Or if you're going to be out there grilling out burgers, doing, you know, hanging out with family, doing what you do, hey, y'all, let's sit around for a minute and let's just read through this thing. This is a holiday we're celebrating. Perhaps we should go ahead and read what's in this document, because I dare say most people don't even know. And then ask ourselves, how many of these things, that's why I put it in modern vernacular, so you could mentally, in your head, say, wow, we might be dealing with that today. But do it with your family, folks. This is where it starts. This is where it starts. You have, you know, during the revolution, you had the Black Robe Regiment. You had all these preachers out there. That's really the backbone behind the American Revolution that nobody ever talks about. Nobody ever talks about the Black Robe Regiment. All these preachers, because back then they all wore black, you know. Boy, they'd have been dying on days like this down in South Carolina. I mean, man. But anyway, these guys wore black. And you know who was telling their parishioners to go out there, hey, y'all, this is unjust. This is not just. We ain't living this way. It was the preachers. Those same, I ain't even going to call them preachers now. They definitely weren't. The most of the people I see in the pulpits these days are, what's the word for that? There's a word for it. They're hiring.
Well, the one guy, was it Creflo Dollar? That's all you need to know.
Doesn't even hide it. Creflo Dollar. Yeah. I mean, he didn't even put dollar in the name. I mean, like, hey, you know, hey, he's alleviating his karmic debt, I suppose. So yep. Anyway, folks, I know this was a longer show and it was a little bit deeper, but folks, I really, really, really wanted to get this out there. I can't thank you all for sticking around and checking us out. Anything else you want to add, son?
Yeah, I think I have two ideas for the next two shows. The real beginning of World War I and then the real beginning of World War II. Like how both of those have actually started. Like the 30 years decision before World War I, how it started.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe, you know, I may not be able to do it next show, but I'm going to, because that's going to take a fair amount of planning. I mean, I could rattle it off right now, but to really put, I think that's a great idea because there have been a number of people in this chat. I mean, holler in the chat, y'all, if that's something you want to see or hear. I know we're more about permaculture, preparedness, and practical living, and I know we bake all that stuff in the front end of the show, but I don't know that I can cover all that in 30 minutes. Maybe we can give it the old college try and, you know.
What is that one podcast you were talking about that did like a whole expose on World War One?
It was James Corbett of the Corbett Report. Yeah, I think they basically scrubbed him off the internet too. But anyway, yeah, maybe I'll have to do that because he, you know, James. There's a number of other people out there that have done incredible work on this. But folks, we got to start reclaiming what our real history is. Because they're rewriting everything, including even the Bible. I mean, before you know, man, I mean, who even knows what version is going to be out there? So, folks, look, I can't thank you enough for tuning in tonight. It's been a joy to be here. Happy 4th of July, man, because, man, it sure seems like we're losing it. I'm hoping maybe a show like this might make a bit of a difference. So I want to thank everybody out there. Be safe this weekend. Be safe with those fireworks. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
From the smallest sprout to the harmony begins in the cycle of life. For the magic's alive, tune it to the beat, feel the fire and thrive. So much.